First Coast Connect with Melissa Ross is sponsored in part by Baptist Health.
Can a Shark Tank-style competition help battle climate change in Florida? Good morning. We're live with you from Studio 2. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead, how you can win up to $10,000 with your climate solution. Join us now at 549-2937. Also this morning, the polls are open, and it's election day in the city of Jacksonville. We'll look at where all of the races stand as voters head to the polls. Yep, it's a runoff today. Get out and vote, folks, if you haven't already. That's all ahead, but first this morning, think maybe you've got an idea for a solution to a climate problem here in Florida? Well, it could be good enough to win up to $10,000 in funding to take it to the next step. Jacksonville University is launching its JU Climate Innovation Challenge, and they're inviting the community to submit ideas, solutions to environmental challenges. You could win money to make your dream come true. This challenge is a Shark Tank-style grant competition, and it's open to residents of all ages. They just launched this, so how's this going to work? Well, with more, we welcome Nick Allard, Dean of the JU College of Law. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having us on this big news day.
And Dr. Quint White, JU Marine Science Research Institute.
Good morning, Melissa.
Okay, folks. Yes, it's election day, and we're going to be talking about the voting at the polls later in the hour. That's later. First, though, we're talking about climate solutions in Florida. What are your questions about this climate innovation challenge at Jacksonville University? 549-2937. Give us a call. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. Facebook always open. Nick Allard, let's start with you. It's my understanding this was your idea?
Guilty as charged, but really I was inspired. I'm sitting across a man who's named Quint and has the same name as the shark tracker in Jaws. So,
Oh, that's right.
No one's ever said that to me before, Nick.
We're going to need a bigger studio.
Exactly. But no, this is a very exciting initiative that takes advantage of all the work that's already going on in the forefront of environmental sustaining research and work. We've got the Marine Science Research Institute that Quint heads at Jacksonville, the College of Arts and Sciences, the Humanities, and the Law School, and all the rest, and also the Public Policy Institute, which is headed by Rick Mullaney, who you know well. And so what we wanted to do was to do something very important, which is to bring in the people of Northeast Florida to help us and join us in trying to develop real initiatives, and we put real money behind it. And we want to include people because all too often people feel, and this was really Quint's perspective, that climate and environmental issues are remote, they're too big, it's somebody else's problem, they don't affect me. And we know that on a daily basis it is, and we want to use the power of the initiatives of the people of Northeast Florida to help us solve it.
549-2937. Quint White, how is this challenge going to work? Tell us how this all is going to bring in the public.
Yeah, well, the idea originally, our provost, Chris Hepienza, and the dean of the College of Arts and Sciences last fall actually started talking about doing something sort of campus-wide about some sort of topic, and we came up with the idea of doing something with climate. And last March, we had a symposium, and we brought in the state climatologist, Ann Calanisi from the city's resiliency was there. We had a very nice crowd talking about that. And at that point, we had been talking about, okay, what else can we do? We want to make this so that people can participate and maybe have good ideas. And so Dean Allard came up with this idea, well, let's have a Shark Tank competition. And so we sort of developed this idea of let's open this up to the people, anybody in the First Coast area, the counties of Duval, Clay, St. John's, Nassau, Flagler, and Baker, so our sort of First Coast area, and anybody can join in. Individuals, school groups, organizations, large groups, small groups, researchers, anybody. It's open to anybody and everybody to try to come up with an innovative idea. And we want to make this open so it's can be research, it can be art, it can be music, it can be a drama, it can be poetry, it can be something else.
So it doesn't necessarily have to be a scientific project that addresses climate change directly.
Absolutely not. We want to try to increase awareness of climate change and what people can do to make a difference. And we think there may be some good ideas out there. And so we did a little bit of fundraising, came up with some money. And so we're able to, at this point, award up to two $10,000 prizes. We may vary that a little bit, because if you get a bunch of really good ideas and they don't need quite as much money, maybe you can combine that to fund more people in more ways. But the idea is that, and we started, yesterday was the first day you could submit. We had a phone-in session last night and had a few questions, mostly about who could apply, which was interesting. And again, I want to emphasize, it's open to anybody, individuals, groups, anybody.
High school kids.
Anybody.
Okay.
Anybody.
Your call's in a bit at 549-2937. You know, Nick Allard, there's been a lot of talk about how we need to leverage the power of the free market to address climate change. And I think that's certainly part of this conversation. What's your response to those who say, well, depending on science, in terms of academic or monetary competition alone, it won't save us, that we need massive government action to really meaningfully address some of these issues, particularly in Florida? What's your response to that?
Well, government in the United States is limited under our Constitution, and it's supposed to do what we can't do for ourselves, but we all can do a lot. And our history in America over the 20th and now the 21st century is that people's behavior can change. And we're trying through this grant program to attract individual and group action by people, helping us sustain. And plus, the free market is working because we have enormous positive response from the business community and providing us with funding for the grants. And we're hopeful that we'll, Quint and I and Chris Corbo, the other dean of arts and sciences, we're going to be working to develop more resources to expand this and hopefully sustain not only the environment, but this program over many years.
Yeah, we'd like to see this continue beyond just this year. So it'll be an ongoing thing. I'm sort of reminded of Margaret Mead's comment about don't underestimate the power of one person making a difference, mm-hmm. because that's what can happen. And I say repeatedly to people all the time, you may not think you make a difference, but if you can multiply your impact a little bit and it ripples through the entire society, that's how we make change.
And as Robert Kennedy said famously, you have ripples of hope that can create waves that can crash and smash and change the biggest problems. So we'll start small. We want it to be small. We want it to be meaningful for individual people and groups here. And we may come up with some good ideas that can be multiplied and followed from others. So Jacksonville could be a beacon of hope for a lot of people around the world.
We'll go to your calls in a bit at 549-2937. Here's new data to share. An increasing number of Florida residents now agree that human actions are causing climate change, including a record number of Florida Republicans. This according to a survey from Florida Atlantic University. Climate change is no longer really a partisan wedge issue. Most people now are on board with the science, which overwhelmingly tells us that climate change is happening and it is attributable to human actions. And so as this becomes less of a divisive political issue, how can we as Floridians work together on solutions? Because other studies have also shown us over and over that Florida is likely the most vulnerable state in the nation to water rise, extreme heat, hurricanes, and other extreme weather events. And we can only expect more of this in the future. It's only going to get worse.
Well, that's why the Jacksonville University, across the board, across disciplines, is already so engaged in working on these issues. But in order to make it practical and have some consequences, it's critical that we get people to engage and participate and follow and learn and act responsibly. But, you know, there is no free market if we don't have a future of the world that we live in. So we all have something at stake here.
Yeah, I can't tell you how many times I've talked to people and they say, well, what if we did so-and-so? And this is a chance for them to take that idea and write it down and think about how they're going to impact it or implement it. And then let's see if we can't put it together. The idea is that between now and I'm trying to look at the date here, July 21st, we'll have people submitting their proposals, and then we'll have a team look at those proposals, weed them down to a smaller number, and they'll be invited to come give a presentation at JU on October 24th, mm-hmm. when we're going to have a symposium as part of the School of Law's environmental symposium at that point in time.
And Melissa, these could be any type of ideas. They could be a play. It could be a proposal for a public service ad campaign to raise awareness. It could be some community action about encouraging, you know, school children to pick up one piece of trash every day for a month. Anything across the board in any disciplines. Or it could be a science invention or some new gadget that helps us sort trash.
What are your ideas, folks? What are your questions about the JU Climate Innovation Challenge? A Shark Tank-style grant competition. If you have a good idea, you should enter and win up to $10,000. 549-2937. Give us a call on this election day. Joe in Atlantic Beach. Hi, Joe. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you so much for taking my call. Great show. 87% of all greenhouse gases comes from animal slaughter industry. And this has been proven by UK Oxford study, Project Drawdown, Greta Thunberg, Dr. Jane Goodall. So we need a behavior change. If more and more people would go vegan, then we can prompt or ask the government to move the $1 billion of subsidies which are given to animal slaughter industry to go to plant-based options, making them more affordable. So how about we do a behavior change? And as Senator Cory Booker says, change doesn't come from Washington. Change has to come to Washington. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. You know, yeah, speaking as someone, I let me just say, I'm not a full vegan, but I do try to eat a mainly plant-based diet. One project idea could involve something that encourages more people to eat that way, make a behavioral change.
I was getting ready to say the exact same thing. That's a great idea. Think about how you can do something to demonstrate to people the value of doing that and try to get people to adopt a more vegan diet. I'm not vegan. I do enjoy vegetables and fruit, but I'm also enjoying meat. But we rarely ever buy beef at my house, but that's another whole story.
Send your proposals in. How do you do that, Quint?
Well, if you want to go to the JU Climate Innovation Challenge, you use your search engine to search for that. You will get to a website that will give you the Climate Innovation Challenge application format. And we've laid it out pretty systematically, that was the word I'm looking for, to help you work through it. There's a limitation number of words, so you want to craft this very carefully. If you have any questions, you can email climate@ju.edu and ask questions, and we'll respond to your questions.
We will respond to your questions.
It's 549-2937. You know, there's no shortage of great ideas about this. And we have been talking about this issue on this program for some time now. Not only do we have a regular segment looking at climate and environmental issues on the radio, we have a whole website. It's called adaptflorida.org, where we focus regularly on how climate change is going to be impacting Florida, how it is already impacting Florida. And, you know, it's just the kind of thing where, honestly, I often feel like I'm just banging my head against a wall because change is so frustratingly slow. And the problem grows ever more urgent. And anyone with children, you know, you think about this in that sense, in that framing. I know I do, because the worst impacts aren't going to happen to people my age or your guys' age. They're going to happen to our kids and our grandkids.
But and within so 50 years, we're going to have to make very dramatic changes.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think people even now quite realize what this could look like.
We're all feeling it. And the good news is that we have seen in our lifetimes, the American people change significantly. Behavior can change. They can't come together. I think smoking practices is a good example. I think related directly is We don't tolerate littering as much. We behave much more responsibly. And from the 60s, I can remember as a child watching TV advertisements.
The crying Indian, Native American.
The crying indigenous chief.
It was that ad that finally changed behavior. So does climate change need an ad like that? I think it
does.
Well,
they should submit an application. They might well win if they come up with an ad campaign.
Yeah, that ad did more to change attitudes than anything else. The tear coming down his cheek.
It was dramatic. And that is exactly the kind of idea to, it could be a play, it could be a book of poetry, things that uplift and get people having a conversation about how important it is for us to act responsibly or to think about preserving the interaction between humans and the natural world we live in.
Yeah, we have a problem in this country in that we don't seem to address problems while they're problems. We wait until they're a crisis, and then we rally. But as you've both said, there's ample opportunities and ample illustrations of where people have changed behavior on a massive scale by doing little tiny things. And I keep emphasizing that. It doesn't necessarily require a massive change that modifies your lifestyle. It can be little things. I think most of us don't like litter. We don't like cigarette butts at traffic lights and stuff like that. And we watched a dramatic drop in that. And we watched us also see recovery of species, because once we recognized the species was in trouble, we took the steps necessary to improve the situation. Not always easy, not always simple, sometimes painful for some people in the population, but generally we can work it out as a population.
And rivers can come back, like the Hudson River in my native New York now has fish in it, which was thought to be impossible.
The St. John's River is better than it used to be, but it's not where it needs to be. And I think we continue to work on that and trying to get people to not use so much fertilizer and not blow their yard clippings into the yard. Those kinds of things, while not directly climate related, they are indirectly climate related. And so, the idea of creating an ad campaign, social media is huge these days. So maybe somebody comes up with a social media campaign they can launch. The idea is that we want anybody, it could be artists, groups, playwrights, poets, writers, scientists, anybody who wants to come up with an idea, submit it to us and let us have a chance to evaluate it.
We don't want boring ideas. This is supposed to be engaging and lively. It's not boring.
Yeah, that's always a goal. Yeah. And it's interesting that when you look at how human beings' brains are hardwired, I think, as you said a minute ago, Quint, to only respond to immediate threats. It's hard to get human beings to respond urgently to a threat that seems far off, down the road. That's the challenge of this. But let's go to some more calls at 549-2937. Kendra in Mandarin. Hi, Kendra. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. I've read very briefly recently about Governor DeSantis's new anti-ESG legislation. Can you please help me understand what that is and how that will impact climate change?
Okay. That is a related question, which I appreciate.
Well, I think
let's go to our lawyer, Nick Allard.
Thanks for handing me the third rail. That legislation, actually, the best way I can comment on its impact on what we're focusing on is that I think it demonstrates that if you're not going to get governmental support, it's up to individual people to pitch in and help. And so that's the segue in terms of explaining.
Yeah, it bans state officials, and let me just quote Reuters, from investing public money to promote environmental, social, and governance goals, and prohibits so-called ESG bond sales.
Right.
So no tax dollars going toward the kind of corporate investing that promotes environmental justice, environmental action.
Yeah. And the interesting thing about the free market is that the ESG movement is something that stockholders and companies have already been increasingly engaging in. And that is the whole concept is, in addition to pursuing the profit motive, they have an obligation to engage in pursuing their business objectives in responsible ways towards environment, social goals, and governance that's responsible for the people and the buyers. So the ESG legislation in Florida is at odds with what is a growing movement in the Fortune 500, and businesses around the world are increasingly devoting their resources, but also their corporate operations towards ESG objectives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's sort of interesting to note, too, that oftentimes corporations and individuals even, we tend to keep doing the same things because that's what we're used to doing. And a lot of times when problems arise and people take a hard look at what they're doing and how they're doing it, they discover there's a better way of doing it that has less impact and perhaps more profit. And I have seen dozens of examples of this in industry where they were doing one thing and because it's the way they'd always done it, and when they sort of got pushed to the wall and said, let's look how we're doing it, and they started re-examining their methods, and they said, oh my gosh, look, we can save money and produce a better product by doing it this way, and it worked. And that's another example of how this innovative challenge could actually be used. So if you have some ideas along those lines, write them down, submit them.
549-2937, Cliff in Riverside. Hey, Cliff.
Hey, good morning. So Dr. Elaine Ingham at the Soil Food Web has this biocomplete rubric for soil, and according to some of their research and outside research, that you could kind of get climate change back to 3 whatever parts per million, I don't know the number, in like 6 years if we just like rehabilitated all our soil, because soil holds so much carbon. And you've got a lot of developers that go in, pretty much xeriscape is a huge area, and then there's an HOA. So even if you're like, oh, I like this area, I like this school district, and you care about the environment, you really are not allowed to even plant a Florida friendly plants in your yard because of the rules. I think it might be a good idea to have the city establish some kind of rubric for a Florida certified yard, where is X percent of this species of a variety of species of plants, and then if you do that, then you would get like some kind of discount on your property tax. There's like a monetary incentive, and then things like that have to be kind of easy, and there's just like a bunch of drops in the bucket that could mm-hmm. sort of help out. But
thanks, Cliff.
Cliff, that's a good example of a lot of things that are actually going on that also reinforces Cliff's point about there's money in them thar hills if you use them well. So there's a big development in the arid southwest regions of the United States to switch from grass, which is lawns and display in public spaces and others, but also on lawns and in other areas, towards more indigenous arid landscaping. And the landscapers are booming and making money hand over fist, and it's reducing the amount of water usage. So similarly, in Florida, I think that there could be a lot of ideas from people. Mm-hmm. I'm amazed at the resilience of our dunes on the coast by the beaches, where they're wiped out in significant extent by a hurricane, but then amazingly on their own, they kind of come back. And how to foster and support and promote that with responsible plantings and other things might be an interesting.
Yeah, but nature's actually amazingly resilient, and that's one of the good news. And people who know me have heard me say many times, if I was a benevolent dictator, I'd ban St. Augustine grass. I mean, it eats up fertilizer, costs money, you water too much, and we spend so much money putting drinking water on our lawns. But again, we're encouraging people to think about innovative ways to help our climate. So I encourage you to brainstorm, think about ideas, and submit them.
And you can make some real money if you win.
Is $10,000 the grand prize? Can you win less than that?
You can win up to $10,000, and we have enough money for a couple of prizes. Hopefully we'll expand that, but we're also going to be trying to raise some money to endow and sustain this program over years. We hope this will be more than a one-off deal, but it partly depends on whether people agree with us that it's a good idea and they participate. So we're not going anywhere unless we get some really good ideas and people have a little bit of fun with this and go through the shark. And by the way, the exercise itself of having to submit a proposal and then if you're selected as a semifinalist, stand up is an educational program and worthwhile for young people.
They'll have to pitch it to a panel of judges,
very distinguished judges,
Shark Tank, like the television show.
Exactly.
And by the way, this is something that the College of Business at Jacksonville runs very successfully, and we've just had a Shark Tank style competition for other types of projects, and we're using that experience to develop this so that it'll be a very effective educational experience for people to engage. Good business experience.
A listener tweets, the show is hot as the temperature is here right now. You would think people would be convinced that climate change is real. We're not even in summertime yet, and it's already so hot these days. Elizabeth emails the show, heads up, it looks like their proposal submission date on the website is August 18th, not July 21st. My child attends high school in Jacksonville, and I'm going to be sharing this climate innovation competition with the school. Okay, so if people have an idea, proposals, I guess, aren't due until, is it August 18th or is it July?
July 21st is when the submission closes. So I'm not sure what they're seeing that says.
Yeah, she sent me a screenshot of your website. But folks, just go to the website and apply for JU's Climate Innovation Challenge. If you have a good idea,
and
you could win up to $10,000.
And I that's terrific that the caller or whoever sent you the email is going to submit it to the high school. We hope everybody does that because these are excellent projects, class projects, school projects. Yeah.
The August 16th date is for 2024, which is when the money has to be spent. So I think that maybe
that's confusion. Yeah.
All right, folks. It says here proposals will be due August 18th. Notification of acceptance will be sent on September 1st. That's on your website. So you've got a little time, everybody, to apply. Check it out. Just Google JU Climate Innovation Challenge and apply and win cash prizes. And I want to thank you both, Dr. Quint White, JU Marine Science Research Institute, Nick Allard, Dean of the JU College of Law. Thanks for coming by.
Thank you.
Our pleasure.
Thank you for making time for this very important project.
You're so welcome. And still ahead this morning, the polls are open. It's election day in Jacksonville. A look at who might come out on top tonight in the city's mayor's race. But up next,
we'll run through Springfield, and it's exciting for us because it's a fundraiser, but it's also, you know, an opportunity to raise awareness about second chances and the work that we do in Jacksonville and actually throughout the state of Florida.
How you can strap on your running shoes this weekend to support Operation New Hope. That's next. Well, they provide help, hope, and support for those trying to build a future. Operation New Hope has received national praise for its work with people impacted by the criminal justice system. And their second annual Hope Starts Here 5K is coming up Saturday. I got a preview from President and CEO Reggie Fullwood. Reggie Fullwood, it's been a while. Good to chat with you. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure, Melissa.
Okay, you've got a big event coming up this weekend benefiting Operation New Hope. Tell us about the Hope Starts Here 5K.
Yeah, we're excited. So this is our second year, and we expect about anywhere between 350 to 400 runners or walkers. And our office is located on Main Street in Springfield, historic mm-hmm. Springfield, that is. And mm-hmm. Our course will run through Springfield. And it's exciting for us because it's a fundraiser, but it's also, you know, an opportunity to raise awareness about second chances and the work that we do in Jacksonville and actually throughout the state of Florida.
Yeah, let's talk about that because Operation New Hope is a nationally recognized concern, giving people who were previously incarcerated, as you said, a second chance. Can you share a little bit about the history of the organization and everything you're doing right now?
Yes, I'd love to. We're excited. We've been around for 24 years. Next year, we'll do a big 25-year anniversary celebration. But so Kevin Gay founded the organization, and anybody knows Kevin is extremely passionate about this work. And we really started as a community development corporation that evolved into a reentry provider. And we help anybody who's been affected by the justice system get back on their feet. And that's job training, job placement, housing, mental health services, case management, all the wraparound services that help people become successful, family reunification, just being very intentional about walking people through the steps of rebuilding their lives. Mm-hmm. And so this is, you know, we do two big events each year. We have a 5K and then we have a golf tournament later in the year. But again, you know, our goal is to just raise awareness that, you know, all of us, we're better than our worst decisions, and you know, people just deserve second chances.
Yeah, and the data proves out if people don't get this kind of assistance, they just reoffend. They need a little extra help to reintegrate, right?
Right, definitely. Yeah, the recidivism rate, the 3-year recidivism rate for the state is about 26%. The 5-year rate is about 60%. Our recidivism rate is about 8%. So, you know, we know that outcomes are better when you put people in programs and you give them job training and mental health support and sobriety support. The outcomes are much better. And that's why, you know, we've been fortunate. You know, we've gotten most of our funding comes from the state of Florida. Then we raised some private funding. The city of Jacksonville also is very supportive. But we sell this to elected officials and private people and foundations that support our work. That outcomes are clearly better when you support people. And here's the other scary part for that a lot of people don't recognize. 95% of the people who go to jail or prison are getting out anyway. So no matter where you are on the political spectrum, those folks are getting out. And if we support them, they'll do better. They won't go back to jail. They'll become productive citizens again.
Your model does have bipartisan support, we should point out. One of the few causes that does. How do you account for that?
You know, because it makes sense on all sides of the aisle. Like, you know, whether you're conservative, it makes sense because the return on investment is pretty significant. If you look at what's been done in Texas, a very red state, they've saved billions of dollars by doing criminal justice reform. So it makes sense. The whole second chances journey makes sense, whether you're extremely spiritual about it or liberal about it. It doesn't matter. It's just, you know, it makes sense to give people the support they need to return back to our communities and just be better citizens.
Okay. So with all of that said, you do raise funds with other events, including this 5K coming up Saturday in partnership with Florida Capital Bank. How can people be part of it?
Go to our website. It's not too late to sign up. We will be taking registration. Go to First Place Sports, which is our partner. They do a great job with these runs. Go to First Place Sports. The run starts at 8:30 on Saturday. We want to see as many people as possible. Again, we're running through historic Springfield, and we're having a party afterwards at Strings Sports Bar next door. And anybody ever been in Strings know that they do a great job with food and beer and other things.
It'll be a
great time on Saturday morning.
Check it out. It's Operation New Hope's second annual Hope Starts Here 5K, Saturday morning, May 20th. Register now at firstplacesports.com. He's President and CEO Reggie Fullwood. Thanks, Reggie.
Thanks, Melissa. We appreciate you always.
Well, today is Election Day in Jacksonville, and the polls are open now. They'll be open till 7 o'clock tonight. If you haven't voted yet, get to a polling place. Tonight, we will know who Jacksonville's next mayor will be, either Donna Deegan or Daniel Davis, and some other local offices will be decided, too. Attorney and author Chris Hand, former chief of staff for a mayor, is on the line now as we look at the numbers coming in. Hey, Chris.
Good morning, Melissa.
Good to talk to you. You know, the Democrats built up about a 6,000-vote lead over the weekend at the end of the early voting period. As I'm looking at the numbers now, Republicans are starting to catch up. No party-affiliated voters are also coming out at a pretty good clip. It's such an interesting election and a very tight race, polls show, between Deegan and Davis.
Well, it is, Melissa. Of course, you know, part of what we look at on these election days is not just what is happening, but also what is not happening. And I think one of the, you know, issues you look at is what is the overall turnout? You know, there are just over 659,000 registered voters in Duval County. Right now, 142,000 of those voters have cast ballots. So we've got 517,000 voters who have not yet cast ballots. And of course, voting is the most fundamental form of effective citizenship. So regardless of where anyone stands on the race, regardless of who they want to be the next mayor or property appraiser or city council, I think now's a good time once again to encourage people to get out to the polls, make sure they vote sometime between 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. today at their neighborhood precinct.
Right. Go to your precinct and vote. Let's get that voter turnout up. It's at 21.5% right now. That's simply terrible. Whoever is elected mayor, you know, Chris, is going to have an incredibly full inbox dealing with stadium negotiations for the Jaguars, pension costs, fixing the city's infrastructure, dealing with the never-ending problem of crime in Jacksonville. The candidates have had a really nasty and contentious campaign. Myself, I participated in one forum over at Channel 4 with Donna Deegan. Davis declined to participate in that one, although he has done some other forums. And I think a lot of people are going to be watching to see which way NPAs break and whether Deegan can get enough Republican votes to overcome what's expected to be traditionally a stronger Republican vote turnout on Election Day itself. What are your thoughts?
Well, I think that's exactly right. I mean, there's sort of three components that, you know, election observers will be watching today. One, traditionally, certainly over the last decade or so, Republicans have really prioritized Election Day in terms of turnout. That appears to be the case already today. You know, we're sitting here at, you know, almost 9:45 a.m. Polls have been open for not quite 3 hours yet, and Republicans have already come pretty close to cutting in half the lead the Democrats had at the end of early voting. So we're seeing that trend normally. And the question will be, at the end of the day, what do those partisan turnout numbers look like? Is it like in March, where, you know, Republicans end up netting about 12,000, 13,000 votes on Election Day? Or will it be more or less than that? That's one of the factors. The other one you mentioned is, how do no party affiliation voters break? They are often decisive in these elections. We know that both campaigns have paid a lot of attention to these NPA voters. Right now, there are just under 16,000 NPA voters who have cast ballots. They may well decide this election. And of course, what we don't know at this point is how many of these Republican voters are actually voting for Donna Deegan or other Democratic candidates, or vice versa in terms of Democrats voting for Daniel Davis or other Republican candidates. So those are all the sorts of factors and metrics that election observers will be tracking today.
Now, of course, Davis got the endorsement of the governor. He had Rick Scott campaigning, canvassing with him over the weekend, Senator Scott. He has the sheriff's endorsement. Donna Deegan has received an array of Republican endorsements by current and former members of the Jacksonville City Council. A listener just emailed me a photo of Donna Deegan and Matt Carlucci in San Marco this morning, sign-waving, saying, her subject line says, "Bipartisanship is flourishing in San Marco." I'm really wondering, Chris, how much do these endorsements matter in the end? What do you think? Oh, I think we might have lost Chris Hand, which is too bad because, you know, Chris Hand has a voice that is, frankly, tailor-made for radio. as we talk about Election Day in the city of Jacksonville. If you haven't voted yet, what's your excuse? Honestly, people, I mean, this turnout is absolutely pathetic. As Chris was pointing out a minute ago, it's at 21%. About 142,000 voters in Duval have turned out to vote so far. That is out of 659,000 and change active eligible voters. So 80% of you out there are eligible to vote, and yet you have not yet cast a ballot for mayor of the city of Jacksonville. And I just got to say, what the heck is wrong with you people? I mean, really, what's your excuse? As far as I'm concerned, you don't have an excuse. You need to go out and vote. You need to take some time today, go to your nearest polling place, and cast a ballot for mayor, for property appraiser. And if you're able, if you're eligible for one of the runoff elections for city council, come on, people, get out and vote. Chris Hand, are you back?
I'm back. And I mean, Melissa, I couldn't agree more with what you just said. As we said earlier, voting is the most fundamental form of effective citizenship. And this is a hugely consequential election. I mean, Jacksonville has major challenges it's facing, but also major opportunities. We're coming out of this pandemic, which has, you know, exacerbated some of those challenges, created new ones, but also, you know, pointed the way to some opportunities in this community. It's a huge impact. And the level of government that most affects our day-to-day lives, most directly, most substantially impacts our lives, is city or county government. And of course, here in Jacksonville, the city and county government are the same thing in the consolidated city of Jacksonville. So, you know, these decisions, these elections will have huge impact for the next 4 years, for the next 8 years, and really sort of lay the foundation for the next decade. So it is crucially vital that those, you know, 517,000 registered voters who have not yet cast a ballot, please take this opportunity to use your effective citizenship powers. Citizen is the most important title in democracy, and today is the day to use that citizenship authority to help decide what the future of the community will look like.
And of course, most of the attention is being placed on the mayor's race between Deegan and Davis, but there's a property appraiser's race, a runoff between Democrat Joyce Morgan and Republican Jason Fisher, a couple of other contests. The latest polls show Morgan ahead in that one, but we'll have to see. You know, and a few council races still to be decided in the runoff, which is today. It is Election Day. The polls close at 7 tonight. And at 7 o'clock tonight, please join me here on the radio along with a fabulous panel. We'll be breaking down all of the results. So join us tonight as we look at the results of the city's elections. And Chris, you'll be on Channel 4 tonight, I do believe. So I want to thank you for coming by this morning.
Thank you, Melissa. Thanks for your continuing coverage of Election 2023.
That's attorney and author Chris Hand with us. And in a moment, after you get out and vote, or maybe before, the Kummer Museum wants you to come out to a special event today. We'll tell you all about it right after this.
Next Fresh Air. Humorist Samantha Irby talks with us about her new collection of essays titled Quietly Hostile, in which she takes us through her rise as a Hollywood TV show writer, the trials of getting turned away at swanky LA restaurants for not dressing hip enough, and the impossible task of making teenagers think you're cool. Join us
today at noon on WJCT News 89.9.
Next time on The World, millions of people earn a living picking up trash. It's dangerous for their health and communities.
People look down upon us to the extent that we don't receive proper treatment when the need arises.
In Ghana, an effort to protect the people who pick up after others. It's on the world.
This afternoon at 3, here on WJCT News 89.9.
It's the biggest stories affecting the Sunshine State. Hi, I'm Melissa Ross. Join us every Friday at noon for the Florida Roundup. Because if it's news in Florida, we want to hear from you. Listen in and call in on the Florida Roundup, live at noon every Friday, or anytime by searching the Florida Roundup on your favorite podcast app.
What's behind the world's worst ever outbreak of bird flu? In the U.S., farmers have lost or had to kill 60 million birds to try and prevent the spread of the virus. Scientists don't believe avian flu is a serious threat to humans. On the next 1A, we hear why new outbreaks in mammals are raising concerns about the potential for it to spread further.
Today, starting at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
Welcome back. Well, finally this hour, the Kummer Museum is inviting you to come out to a special event this morning. Self-taught topiary artist Mike Gibbises Gibson is going to demonstrate his unique and whimsical style by sculpting on the fly 4 site-specific topiaries in the Kummer Gardens. Make it a Florida morning, sip a little orange juice, and watch the magic happen. We've got the artist Mike Gibson here in studio. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
And Patrick McCray, Doolittle Family Director of Gardens and Horticulture at the Kummer. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Melissa.
All right, Mike, let's start with you. You have your, by the way, your clippers right here with you.
That's right.
So as you were describing this to me, this is almost going to be like a real life scene out of the movie Edward Scissorhands. You're going to go in the garden of the Kummer Museum and sculpt topiaries on the fly.
On the fly. I have no preset idea of what I'm going to do. The idea is just going to come to me, and as I'm clipping, and I'm going to create something beautiful.
You're ambidextrous, so you've got shears in both hands.
Both hands.
While you do this,
I'm the real deal, Holyfield, Edward Scissorhands.
Oh my gosh!
I'm clipping with both hands at the same time.
What do you love about topiary? How did you get into this?
Oh man, you know what? I used to hate trimming the bushes as a kid.
As a kid,
it was a chore I had to do every week. You know, but my father is an award-winning artist, and he taught me how to trim the bushes perfectly. By 7, I mastered the skill of trimming these bushes. 7, right? What 7-year-old are you giving a pair of shears to?
Yeah,
but by 7, you know, I was trimming the perfectly trim barberry bushes and rhododendrons and pyramidal-shaped yews, and it kind of just grew into a passion from there.
You're self-taught. What's your process? How did you get to the point you're at today?
Oh, wow. So a lot of practice.
Yeah.
You know, trial and error. You know, by 10, I was doing the neighbors, high school, I was across town. You know, I'm 36 now, so I've been doing this for almost 30 years. So I've been doing this my entire life. So it's been a lot of practice. I'm an artist by trade. I went to school for fine art, so I'm thinking on a artistic level more so than like just a horticulturalist. Nothing against horticulturalists here.
Yeah, but this is art. This is art.
It is.
Yeah.
It is. It's a forgotten art. You know, there's not a lot of topiary artists in the country, let alone the world. You know, so it's something that I wanted to make sure that I stood out amongst the rest. Not just, you know, your normal landscaper cutting grass. I found a niche and figured out that nobody's doing topiary, and I can express myself through trimming trees and shrubs.
Okay, so Patrick, this sounds so interesting and unusual. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit more about how this event's going to unfold today.
Well, we actually have 2 events today. This morning at 11:15, we have a demonstration with Mike, which will be so interesting because he'll go back and forth between 4 different existing shrubs that we have, and he'll be creating these works of art out of those shrubs. And then tonight, we have Mike coming back at 7 o'clock to give a lecture on the history and cultural context and therapeutic benefits of topiary, which are pretty interesting. And there are many therapeutic benefits of topiary, so we're really excited to hear about that as well. and that's tonight at 7 o'clock. And tonight also happens to be Night Out Jacks, which is ViStar sponsored. So from 4 to 9 p.m., admission to the museum is free.
Nice.
And then Mike's talk is an additional fee on top of that. But it's going to be a really great night at the Kummer Museum today and tonight.
Now, Mike's art is being presented in conjunction with another exhibition you brought to the gardens called Flamboyance.
Yes.
It's 50 topiary flamingos, which is the coolest thing ever.
They're so cool. Yeah.
They're so cool. They're so cool. And people are just so excited. Every time there are kids and folks coming out to see the flamingos, they're blown away. Mike has a young daughter who was there last night and was just giddy over these topiary flamingos. So it's doing what we wanted it to do, and it's really increasing the sort of activation and attention that our gardens are receiving.
So when you talk tonight about topiary as therapy, how does that work as therapy for you and other people?
I tell you, topiary was probably life-changing for me. I grew up, ADD, I had, diagnosed psychiatrist, I was on medicine, but the one thing that kept me grounded and focused was clipping the hedges, staying in the yard. It's just like gardening, topiary is very therapeutic. It's a stress reliever. It's something that helps with, your overall health and wellness. It helps with your dexterity, all ages. My daughter she'll be 5 tomorrow. Yes, happy birthday, Paisley. Uh-huh. And she'll be 5 tomorrow, but she's doing topiary. I'm teaching her topiary, so all ages can do topiary. Anyone can learn, and it's so therapeutic. It's very relaxing. It's something that's the time ceases to exist when you're doing
getting
it.
That flow.
Oh, you get in the zone.
That zone of flow. Yeah.
I put on a pair of headphones, mm-hmm. and I disappear for a few hours.
That is so great. Well, I wish I could come to this, but folks, you can come to this. Come on out to the Kummer Museum today at 11:15 and see this incredible live topiary demonstration by Mike. This is at 11:15 this morning. And then tonight, Mike will lead the talk, The Art and Therapy of Topiary. Go to kummermuseum.org to register and enjoy on this election day. Cast your vote in between the two events.
That's right.
And I want to thank you both so much, artist Mike Gibson and Patrick McRae of the Kummer Museum. Thank you both, guys. It sounds amazing.
Thanks. Oh, thank you. Thanks for having us. Make sure you vote.
That's right.
It's election day. Go vote, everybody. We'll be back tonight at 7 p.m. with full election results. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.